and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza on this pre-recorded program via remote from Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Thursday, July 30th, 2020. Residents of Bor Town are living in water.
The flooding occurred during the night while we were asleep. I was surprised by water almost entering my bed. We relocated to this road by night.
And Sudan government deploys troops in Darfur.
We are planning to have 6,000 from police, 6,000 from the army, 6,000 from the rapid support forces, and 6,000 from other security agencies.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Some residents of the Jonglei state capital, Bor, have fled their homes due to massive floods caused by heavy rains. State authorities and aid agencies say a broken dike poured water into homes, markets, and government offices. The Director for Relief and Rehabilitation Commission in Jonglei state says more than 55,000 people have fled their homes and more people have been displaced across the town. VOA could not independently verify the number of people affected by this latest flood. For VOA News, Dengai Deng reports from Bor.
23-year-old Bor resident Alunga Yuen wades through knee-high water on a flooded street. This is Bor Town's main street, which now looks more like a river. Yuen has chafed a plastic sheet into a sort of canoe to move her belongings from her flooded house in Bor Town's Haipanjak suburb to higher ground. Speaking in her native Dinka language, Yuen says she is stranded on the street after most of her belongings, including clothes, mattresses, and food, were either destroyed or carried away by the flood waters.
The flooding occurred during the night while we were asleep. I was surprised by water almost entering my bed. We relocated to this road by night. The whole of Haipanjak area has been evacuated and is now left a river. Nobody is there. Now we are here with children, beds and utensils. Even this road is also getting flooded. As you can see, water over there.
Speaking in Dinka, 70-year-old Mayan Lake, a resident of Bor Town's Block 2 suburb, says the flooding also forced his family to abandon their house and they are stranded on the street.
The town has been taken over by the flooding. There are my family members and we are now evacuating this place. Only that narrow place, which is better, but it is going to flood tonight as the water continues flowing in. The water is all over and even now I am not so sure where we are going to relocate. I can't consider going to the rural area. It is risky there because of the rampant insecurity.
Hundreds of Bor residents and traders say they have lost their source of livelihood in the flooding, including chickens, merchandise for sale and food items. 38-year-old Ugandan national Hawa Bakali, who owns a laundry shop in Bor Town, says she was shocked when she woke up this morning to find her shop submerged in water.
This flood came yesterday at night around 12, so it has affected so many people now. We are in a flood. People, they are on the road. They are suffering. Even we are going to die like rats.
Jonglei State Secretary General Mabiura Atim says most government offices are underwater. Atim says he is working with local youth to repair the dike.
The dike was constructed years ago by the Korean team at a broken part in one of the estates of Bor Town, Haimeshua, and that permit a lot of water to be pouring in yesterday. So with that, most of the areas here in Bor Town now, they're underwater. And myself, with all the youth of Bor Town, we are now fighting the flood to ensure the broken part is now fixed.
Jonglei State Relief and Rehabilitation Commission Director Gabriel Dengajak says more than 50,000 people have been affected by the flooding. He says his office is working with aid workers to assess the needs of the displaced.
So far, what we are counting on is the directly affected communities of Haimeshua, Haipanjak, to move northward. and this has come down to 55,000 individuals for now. But we are still making more assessments, getting more figures. We will be updating these figures as time goes by.
Michael Madinga Kweth from the South Sudan Red Cross in Bor says his organization and other aid agencies have sent assessment reports to Juba. The first priority is providing clean water to the displaced, says Akweth.
Most of the Latins have submerged underwater, so the community need to be supported to ensure that the sanitation is in place. The other need is they need water channels. We have recommended that the community should be supported with some tools to be able to give the community family-based water channels to the main channels, so that the water could be drained to the bigger water channels.
Akweth says the South Sudan Red Cross will intervene once they get a response from headquarters in Juba. For VOA News, I am Deng Gaiding in Bor.
The first barge of thousands of troops meant to quell a string of deadly attacks in Sudan's Darfur area have arrived in the region. Dozens of people have been killed in militia raids across Darfur in recent weeks, prompting the transitional government in Sudan to announce Sunday that it would send a joint protection force to the region. For VOA News, Michael Atit reports from Khartoum.
Speaking to the press in Khartoum Wednesday, Sudan's Information Minister Faisal Mohamed Saleh confirms that some troops are on the ground in parts of Darfur. Sudan's Prime Minister Abdallah Hamdok ordered the deployment on Sunday after an attack left 60 dead, including children and dozens wounded in Mestari village in West Darfur. Saleh says a total of 24,000 troops will be deployed in the coming days to provide protection to civilians and allow them to carry out their agricultural activities.
We are planning to have 6,000 from police, 6,000 from the army, 6,000 from the rapid support forces, and 6,000 from other security agencies. And some of them have already arrived in some parts of Darfur and are expected to provide security and protect civilians. This is a rainy season, and most people from the affected areas have reported that civilians are unable to go to their farms.
Thousands of displaced people have fled to West Darfur state capital Al-Janina to escape the killings in Mestari village. A local resident of Al-Janina confirms that members of the joint force arrived in the area Wednesday. He said they arrived in pickup trucks and gathered around the town's military barracks. The local resident Abdurrahim Abdullah says they don't know when the troops will be deployed to surrounding villages, including Mestari, some 40 kilometers south of Al-Janina.
We don't have details of when they will be deployed, but the situation might not change much. Our people are still displaced after the massacre.
Darfuri rebel leader Muhammad Abdurrahman al-Nair of the Sudan Liberation Movement, Abdul Wahid rebel group, condemned the attacks on civilians in Darfur. Al-Nair blames whom he calls elements of the Bashir's regime in the Sudanese transitional government for the violence. Omar al-Bashir was overthrown last year and is currently in prison after being convicted of corruption. The rebel leader al-Nair accused government figures linked to Bashir of supporting the armed militia known as Janjaweed to destabilize Darfur.
These crimes are an extension of the crimes of Omar al-Bashir regime, displacing the indigenous people and dominating their lands. The Khartoum government is unable to provide security in Darfur, therefore requires the intervention of the international community to protect civilians.
Since 2007, a joint UN and African Union peacekeeping mission has deployed in Darfur. However, the mission has come under criticism in the past for not doing enough to protect civilians. In recent years, the UN Security Council voted to withdraw some UNAMID troops. The mission is expected to close entirely in December this year. UNAMID spokesperson Ashraf Issa said he believes the timing of the latest attacks is unfortunate when peacekeepers have left most areas in the region. He said UNAMID welcomed the announcement by Prime Minister Hamdok on the deployment of Joint Protection Force to protect civilians in Darfur. The UNAMID official said he hopes the force will be fully deployed as soon as possible and will be adequately equipped and trained to protect all residents of Darfur without exception.
The primary responsibility of protecting civilians lies with the sovereign state, the government of Sudan. UNAMID, wherever it is still operates, also conducts physical protection of civilians, as we responded to the incidents in Kutum and Fata Barno, where we have troops.
Darfur has been engulfed in war since 2003. The UN estimated that between 300 to 400,000 people have been killed and hundreds of thousands displaced. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum.
South Sudan and World Health Organization officials say the number of South Sudanese suffering from hepatitis B is too high. A health ministry official overseeing the fight against hepatitis B says more than a million South Sudanese were diagnosed with the virus from 2016 to 2018. The World Health Organization says the figure is worrying, and with limited health facilities in the country, more people may suffer complications from the disease. For VOA News, Lasuba Memo reports from Juba.
South Sudan Health Ministry's Dr. Victoria Achut says hepatitis B is more widely spread among South Sudanese communities than hepatitis A or hepatitis C. Dr. Achut says studies carried out by the health ministry indicate 11% of the South Sudanese population has hepatitis B, or about 1 million people. She says her ministry has developed a strategy to combat the spread of the virus.
One of the plans is to conduct more surveys to have a better understanding and estimate to look into more data, because in the past, a dedicated program for hepatitis in the Ministry of Health was not there, but we have taken it up when many cases were reported in the community.
Dr. Achut says a majority of the hepatitis B cases were reported from private health facilities rather than government-run health centers. She says that's because there is more access to diagnosis and treatment in private health facilities compared to government-run hospitals.
There is no dedicated treatment for it yet in the public hospitals, and that is what we are trying to do. We have in our strategic plan proposed to do 3 referral centers in the 3 big regional capitals, Juba, Wau, and Malakal, plus 10 centers in the states and other primary health care centers in the states, from screening sites for hepatitis where people can come and access viral load services.
Dr. Achut says all South Sudanese should get tested for hepatitis B and undergo the treatment if they test positive. Dr. Moses Mutebi, a medical officer in charge of HIV and AIDS and hepatitis treatment at the World Health Organization in South Sudan, calls the number of people suffering from hepatitis B in South Sudan worrying. He says in a country like South Sudan, where quality health services are scarce, many people could die from the disease due to complications.
About 1 million people may be potentially infected, then it means that those complications, a good percentage of those can eventually turn out to have liver disease, a liver cancer or liver cirrhosis and chronic bones. And therefore, these usually can lead into death.
Matiok Anthony, a clinician turned activist who has worked at the Juba Teaching Hospital and South Sudan's blood bank, says he worries many more people are going to contract hepatitis B in South Sudan.
So this is a great concern to us as friends of humanity, and we see into it that leaving this great number of over a million South Sudanese with hepatitis without an intervention means it is going to be a disaster for our country. Because of mode of transmission, these millions are going to disseminate, they're going to transmit the virus to the others, and it means the disease will be continuing to people. So it means the number is going to double and many people are going to be sick.
Anthony says when he worked at the blood bank, many blood donors tested positive for hepatitis B, but their blood was disqualified. This year's World Hepatitis Day is focusing on prevention of mother-to-child transmission of the virus. Dr. Motebi says the sub-Saharan region is the most affected area on the continent, with most cases being mother-to-child transmission.
85% of our hepatitis is a hepatitis B. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
85% of the hepatitis burden within Africa is hepatitis B. And most of the vulnerable infection is within first month of life, yeah. Prevented by a birth dose vaccination, yeah. Which is within the first 24 hours. If you have this birth dose included within our programs within Africa, then we shall be able to combat this disease for the future generation.
WHO hopes to reach 90% of the population in sub-Saharan Africa and conduct backdoor vaccination campaigns in order to reduce new infections and prevent deaths of 1.5 million people by 2035. For VOA News, I am Lasuba Memo in Juba.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, a new governor for Darfur promises to improve security. That story is coming up right after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
if you could swap lives for a day, who would you swap with and why?
I'll swap with our finance minister because I think he's doing a yeoman job and I want to have a feel of what he goes through in a day.
I'll change with my dad because I love him so much. He has been there for us. I mean, like, he has taken us in good schools. He has taken care of us because for us, our mom is not working. We depend on our dad.
If I was to swap with someone, I feel I admire myself more than anyone in this life, and I feel I'm capable of doing what those people are doing, so I would not swap for any person.
I would like to change position with the president because I feel it would be nice to give instruction to everyone.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Hello, I'm VOA health correspondent Linor Modou. The World Health Organization and Africa Centers for Disease Control say we all can help fight the global pandemic by frequently washing our hands or using hand sanitizers. For more information on protecting yourself and others, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. The new governor of Sudan's Darfur state has vowed to end intercommunal fighting and corruption in the state. Musa Mahdi Ishaq says he is aware of the challenges ahead of him as he works to dismantle institutions created by former President Omar al-Bashir during his 30-year rule. Ishaq says he believes, consulting with sons and daughters of the state, he will overcome any potential challenges. For VOA News, Michael Atit reports from Khartoum.
Dressed in a dark brown business suit and white shirt, Governor Mahdi told reporters during news conference at the Sudan News Agency office that ending years of attacks and counter-attacks between various communities will not be easy. Speaking in Arabic, Mahdi says he will work with local leaders across the state to address the challenges facing the state.
This is a very hard task and it's accompanied by a lot of challenges, which include tribal conflict and economic challenges. But I am optimistic about a bright future for our state. I will work tirelessly to resolve all these issues by God's grace.
Like the other four states in Darfur, South Darfur has witnessed a wave of attacks and counter-attacks, mostly between different communities, prompted by dispute over cattle and grazing land. Mahdi is asking all traditional and religious leaders in South Darfur state to begin a series of grassroots meetings to try to reconcile various ethnic communities and preach the benefits of peaceful coexistence.
I came as the governor for all the ethnicities in the area, and I will work together to fight tribalism, regionalism, and all divisions that stand in the way of progress for our people in South Darfur. I will be just to all and cooperate with different political forces, tribes, and ethnicities.
UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres recently condemned the intercommunal violence in parts of Darfur, which left dozens of people dead and has displaced thousands of people in dire need of humanitarian assistance. In a statement issued yesterday, Stephen Dujarric, the UN Secretary General's spokesman, said deliberate attacks against civilians violate international human rights law and international humanitarian law. Governor Mahdi attributed escalating violence in Darfur to what he calls bad policies during ousted President Omar al-Bashir's administration, which he says pitted local communities against each other.
I am here to assure our people of my commitment to remove all elements of the previous regime in South Darfur State. I will be a sharp spear in the face of all corrupt officials and their practices, and we will work together to fight all those who have mismanaged the public funds, starting immediately.
The governor also vows to improve the living condition of South Darfur citizens through a new economic programs. He also promised to provide security at all times to farmers so they can cultivate their land and provide food for local consumption, and even more can be exported to other states.
We are aware that the whole country has been affected by the ongoing economic situation, and our state is no exception. But I am here to assure our people that I am capable of addressing the burden weighing on their shoulders through new mechanisms. I want you to be calm and ready to work with me to achieve this program.
South Darfur State, which borders neighboring South Sudan and the Central African Republic, has been the site for the stepped-up insecurity in recent years, which officials say is due to the spread of firearms in the hands of civilians. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum.
From Khartoum, we move to Somalia. The Horn of Africa's nation's livestock industry is reeling after Saudi Arabia cancelled the Hajj Muslim pilgrimage for foreigners due to COVID-19. Somalia earns the majority of its export earnings from livestock, and it normally sells millions of cattle and goats to Saudi Arabia to feed pilgrims at the Hajj. For VOA News, Muhammad Yusuf reports from Nairobi.
Muslims worldwide are preparing to celebrate Eid al-Hajj, the end of the Hajj pilgrimage in Mecca, Saudi Arabia. 42-year-old Hassan Farah is a livestock trader in southern Somalia. He typically will be a busy man at this time of year, loading ships with livestock to Gulf countries, but not this year. He says the coronavirus has destroyed his business. He says before the virus we used to export livestock, we used to get our livelihood. Then the virus came and everything we are doing came to a stop. He says here in Lower Juba we would export livestock 2-3 times a month, but now we export once every 3 months. According to a 2019 Veterinary Medicine and Science report, Saudi Arabia imports upward of 3 million heads of goats, sheep, cattle and camels during the Hajj season. Somali traders supply a large number of the animals. Khalid Said is a livestock coordinator for the UN Food and Agriculture Organization in Somalia. He says, despite the virus and restrictions, Somali traders were able to export at least 1.3 million animals in 4 months this year after Saudi Arabia lifted the ban on Somali livestock.
The ban was lifted from Somali livestock in early this year. And since then, immediately the exportation started to the Middle East. So I can say from April to end of July, the value of the animals exported to the Middle East, it is around 90 to 95 million USD dollars.
However, Abdiaziz Bashir Aden, Kismayo Livestock Director, says that's a low number compared to previous years. He says livestock traders target a time like this during the Hajj period. The cancellation of the pilgrimage has made the situation even worse. He says the prices have gone down. For example, he says a goat that was going for $70-$80 now is being sold at $50, and the cancellation of the pilgrimage is to blame for the low price. According to the World Bank, Somalia has an estimated 53 million heads of livestock, which account for about 75% of Somalia's exports. The pandemic has left tens of thousands of families without an income and little hope of making a living unless COVID-19 is brought under control. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
The World Health Organization and Africa Center for Disease Control say we can all help fight the corona pandemic by wearing face masks that cover our mouths and nose when we are in crowded places or areas. For more information, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest news on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
That's our show for this Thursday. We now leave you with a song from West Nile region in Uganda. We've been listening to a song by a group from West Nile region in Uganda. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for allowing us into your homes and vehicles. Remember to wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers because there is no cure for coronavirus. Join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
ifuwa ola dirine iya kukwasi ikati muteregowa ei inana nabesi ikati mu